And now we move on to our regular roundtable discussion. We'll discuss also why Stanley Crouch thinks Barack Obama is not black like him. So joining us today from NPR headquarters in D.C., Joe Davidson, editor at The Washington Post, and Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. We've also got Nat Irvin, president of Future Focus 2020, who teaches at the Babcock Graduate School of Management of Wake Forest University. He's at member station WFDD in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So thanks for joining us. And let's talk briefly about direct democracy. You know, we've got ballot initiatives, one of them in some states only. One of them ended higher ed affirmative action in California. Now there's a similar initiative on the ballot Tuesday in Michigan. And in places like California, there's so many initiatives on things like eminent domain, which we covered recently, that it's hard to keep track. So, Professor Berry, you know, do we think direct democracy could be a cure or could it be a problem?
It's not going to happen. That's the first thing. So we're talking about, you know, something that isn't going to happen. We're going to keep the system that we've got. We'd have to change the Constitution, and that's not going to happen. I don't even want a constitutional convention. Who knows what would happen? And also, you ask all the right questions. I mean, and the responses to some of these referenda don't give me any confidence that people would be any more informed than they are right now about the issue. So, one, it's not going to happen, and two, it might be okay, but in the Federalist Papers, there's all this discussion about whether we should have a direct democracy or a republic. In the end game is that given the diversity, the variety, the geographic extent of the country, even then, and it's much greater now, that a republican government was the best way to go. So it's not going to happen.
Nat, regardless of whether or not you think it's going to happen in the near future, do you think that a republic is the best way to serve America? Because, I mean, various people, all sorts of political stripes have complained about things like gerrymandering that give certain groups an advantage over others. Should we just all go to the polls and say, a war in Iraq, check or not check? You know, education, check.
Well, I think, you know, I agree with Mary. I think what happens is that in our democracy, Republican form of democracy, actually it's quite flexible. When you look at this year's election, November 7th, there are 200 statewide ballot measures. And you listed some of the issues that people are dealing with. I think our system is fairly flexible. The challenge that we face with, if we were to have too many of these initiatives, which is why I'm concerned about it, is that basically people just don't know what they're voting for. I mean, here in North Carolina, we elect judges. But even the most astute observers of the political process, people who keep up with the issues, don't know what the judges stand for. You basically have no idea who you're voting for. You're voting for a person who says he's a Democratic judge or a Republican judge, and he gives you this little spiel, but you don't really know what the judge is about. And so when you talk about issues of trying to actually decide, for example, would you limit some ballot initiative this year will limit the number of the percentage of money that can be spent on instructional classroom, the classroom instruction to 65%. How do you know whether that's a good idea? And what happens is the people who have the most money will sway public opinion. And I think that's one of those downsides of having a direct democracy.
Joe?
Well, I think the clearest example of where this country could have a direct democracy is in the election of the presidency. I was surprised after after George Bush won or won the Electoral College, I should say, the first time, that the Democrats did not make a big stink about the Electoral College, because clearly you have a situation here where it's not even a representative democracy. Most of the people in the country did not vote for George Bush. They voted for his opponent. Nonetheless, he was elected by the Electoral College and not by a popular vote. And so But the response to the Electoral College after that was fairly tame. There was no outcry, really, that it be changed by the Democratic Party, and certainly not the Republican Party. And so it seems as if this country, certainly the political parties, are basically comfortable with that form of democracy, if if that's in fact what it is.
I think we need to come back to the Electoral College and do a longer exploration, but we've got some news that's just sort of coming up today, which is that the Reverend Ted Haggard resigned as president of the National Association of Evangelicals yesterday. He's married, a father of five. He is allegedly someone who has been soliciting both gay sex and methamphetamine from the guy that he paid for sex. And so when church leaders speak out on political topics, do their misdeeds resonate in both politics and religion? I'm just thinking here of how from the earlier part of our show today, Bishop John Jimenez was saying, you know, there needs to be a Christian political party. There needs to be a focus on gay marriage. But, you know, when you blend the two, if someone has a misdeed, it can really ricochet. And so, you know, Joe, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that in this particular case, I don't think it's going to have a great deal of ramifications nationally. I think in Colorado it may, where you have this ballot measure regarding marriage for same-sex marriage, and because he's prominent, particularly in Colorado, I think kind of long-term or nationwide ramifications, my guess is that there won't be much in that area. For one, a lot of people don't, I mean, for one reason is a lot of people don't go to the polls based on what a minister many miles away from them has to say, even if this is even if he's a minister of a mega church, even if he's on national television. I don't think a lot of people base their voting decisions on what that particular person says, and if that person falls, shall we say, because of allegations, I don't think that will necessarily change any votes either.
But for Ryan, I think that if the evangelicals and the other Christian conservatives had not eroded this the barrier between the separation of church and state and been all involved in these political activities, like the bishops who were on the earlier interview, no one would care except those who, you know, care about what kind of sex people have, about what Reverend Haggard did. And he could be a sinner, and within the church they could go do whatever they wanted to do about it. But the fact that they have now just said that they want to run willy-nilly over that barrier and are all involved in political things and trying to get even more deeply involved in them, and then the hypocrisy of it is what makes you call attention to it. And so that's why they're getting hoisted by their own petard, more so to speak.
Nat, you know, what's the danger? I mean, is this going to produce echoes of, it's a different situation from Foley, but it's another, you know, since this minister in Colorado Springs was a big GOP supporter, is it going to ricochet on the party?
Oh, I doubt it. I think what it illustrates more than anything is the common humanity that we all share. I think it, you know, it reminds me of the thing that you say you hate the most is probably the thing that's in you. And this country still, you know, we talk about it often on this show, the issues of gay marriage, how we're going to deal with the identity of the gay community within the country. And when you see a man like this, or the former governor of New Jersey, and others who have had to struggle with their own sexual identity, then what it probably does is it will help this country to some extent to say, wait a minute, maybe we need to take a greater look, a more deeper look at how we look at sexual identity, how we look at these matters of gay marriage. Is it something as simple as just putting I'm opposed to gay marriage on a ballot, on a ballot initiative, as we were talking earlier? It's not. And it's too bad for this minister and his family for what he's going to have to go through with. I'm sympathetic with him. I'm sympathetic with everybody who deals with a complex issue like this, and then it becomes public.
Well, speaking of complex issues and being public around Christianity, religion, government, the U.S. military is kind of caught up in tensions between evangelicals who say we have the right to preach the message of God and people who say we don't want to hear it. So there's like this lawsuit that was actually tossed out by Michael Weinstein and other ex-cadets at the Air Force Academy, who said that a military chaplain violated their religious freedom by urging the cadets to attend Christian services or face being burned in the fires of hell. And then on the other side, people who feel punished for praying out loud. So when it comes to this public space of political discourse and the, you know, in this case, the military, how are people supposed to present themselves to the world? I mean, if you have a deeply felt belief, should you be able to express it? And where does your belief end at someone else's door?
You can't, because it's much like the story about the Muslim taxi drivers who wanted to be taxi drivers at the airport, but they didn't want to carry people who had alcohol because it was against their faith. And they were engaged. They didn't have to drive taxis at the airport. They had it, and they had a monopoly of it, and they were supposed to be serving the public. Here we have the military, which has people of all faiths in it and people of no faith in it, and which is a government institution funded by taxpayers. And here, because I, as a Baptist, feel that I should go out and proselytize, or a chaplain who is, we should go and insist that everybody else profess Christianity or tell them what they must do and have no respect at all for their religion. It is starting from the top. This climate has worsened in the last few years in this country of talking about matters of faith which should be kept separate. And now you have people insisting and running roughshod over other people's faiths. It's time to get, you know, religion out of the public sphere. And now we have more and more and more of it. And it's going to create more disunity in the military. And in the military, we need people to come together to work in the national defense and not to be divided over matters of faith and showing disrespect at funerals for people who are of a different faith and all the rest of it.
I have to move on because we don't have much time. Joe and Nat, very quickly, what I would ask you is some people, you know, on a different context say, well, we need prayer back in the schools. You know, is there ever a legitimate purpose for using religion in the public sphere? And Joe, I'm going to talk to you first.
Well, certainly in the military, there's ample opportunity to express your faith. There are chaplains of all faiths in the military. They are officers in the military. So I think the military certainly recognizes the need or the desire for there to be an opportunity for people to express their faith. It just should not be forced upon them in any way. And I think that's the crucial issue.
Nat?
Well, my answer is this, that, you know, Diana Eck, who's written a new book, she's a Harvard professor, called A New Religious, I think it's called A New Religious America, and it says basically that we are the most religiously diverse nation in the world. And the struggle that the military has right now, and I think they've just about got it right, which is to try to find that balance, is what we're going to all have to deal with. We have more, soon to be more Muslims than we have Jews in this country, more Muslims than Episcopalians. And when you just look at all the diversity that is happening, not just in terms of the, you know, the face of America, but the faith of America, it's a matter of just trying to find the balance. And I think the military just about got it right. You know, when you got the uniform on, hey, you're a government officer and you can't proselytize. That's a reasonable expectation, it seems to me.
All right. We've got Nat Ervin of Future Focus 2020, Mary Frances Berry of the University of Pennsylvania, Joe Davidson of The Washington Post. Thank you all.
Thank you.